All right, let's go ahead and get started. I want to begin by sharing something with you, and I've got to be careful. I don't spend too much time on this, but we've talked about the difficulty of studying the Bible in a bird's eye view and a worm's eye view, two different ways. You know, one's to back away, and that's what we're trying to do, cover 15 Bible periods of history in 8 or 9 classes is really a difficult thing to do. But I ran across this statement. It's written, it comes from one of the Christians. He was born in 354 A.D. So a little over 300 years after the church, and he studied the Bible. And he talks about in-depth study of the Bible. And I don't know if you can read that or not, but let me just read it to you in case you cannot. I'll make some comments as we go through it. The Christian scriptures are so deep that even if I studied them to the exclusion of everything else, from early childhood to worn out old age, with ample leisure and untiring zeal, and with greater capacity of mind than I possess, being smarter than I am, each day I would still discover new riches within them. Think about, I don't know how long you've been in the church, but the longer in the church, the deeper you can study. And then he says, the fundamental truths necessary for salvation are found with ease in the scriptures. Aren't you glad? Think of how deep the scriptures are, but the things most important to our eternal salvation, you've got to have help to misunderstand what those verses say. And that's what he is affirming. He says, but even if a person has accepted these truths, is God-fearing and righteous in his actions, there are still so many things which lie under a vast veil of actions. There are still many things which are under the vast veil of mystery. Through reading the scriptures, we can pierce this veil and find the deepest wisdom in the words which express these mysteries and in the mysteries themselves. You got to hear that. Look at every word, the way we've been talking about it. When you read the Bible, look at every word. And he says, here's the mysteries of the gospel, the profound mysteries of the gospel. And if you'll just look at the words, you'll be astounded at what you've learned, and you'll be amazed at what you'll be able to learn, and then you'll be amazed in the understanding of the mysteries. But here's, I think, the best of. The oldest, the ablest, and the most ardent students of the scriptures will say at the end of each day, I have finished, yet my study have only just begun. As long as you live, don't care how old you are, how long you've been in the church, I've just begun. That is a profound, wouldn't it like to have heard this guy preach? It's obvious how much time he'd spent studying the Bible. Now then, let's speed up. We've got a long way to go. Let's talk about these 15 years of Bible history. And we're changing the wording in the 15 years of Bible history somewhat because of there's different ways of dividing it up into 15 periods, and we had antediluvian and post-diluvian, and that's the way that I learned it some time ago, and that's a whole lot easier way to learn it. And that is, here's the outline that we'll use, same covering the same topics and dividing it slightly different, but from the creation to the flood to the patriarchs to Egyptian bondage to the Exodus, and go all the way from there through the time of Joshua and Judges and the period of the kings, the divided kingdom, the kingdom of Judah alone, captivity, restoration, between the Testaments, and then you get to the New Testament. And that's what we're going to study. Now, what we have studied is the creation and the flood and the patriarchs. Go ahead and put that next slide up, because we're trying to just put in the background some things right now, lightening the brightness of some of the words that are there. That's what we've studied thus far. Now tonight, we're going to go into another study and add to the studies that we've already had. And so the next slide shows that we're talking about the Egyptian bondage and the Exodus. That's a massive amount of material to cover. really, if you'll stop and think about this, it's the story of the life of Joseph and Moses. And whenever you talk about the Exodus, that's all Moses. And the next one is really Joshua, the conquest of Canaan. So what are we studying tonight? Well, we've talked about the creation. We've talked about the flood. We've talked about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, calling them the patriarchs. Let's talk about where the Bibles go once you get to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Well, we closed last week with talking about the threefold promise that God made to Abraham. He made it to Isaac. We made it to Jacob. We spent time last week looking at verses in the book of Genesis where God three times says the same thing. Make of you a great nation, put you in a great land, and someday send a great Savior. I don't know about you, but I'm a visual learner, and it really helps me to study maps. And so go ahead and put that next slide up, because it has on it the boundaries of the promised land. What are we talking about? That which God promised to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Now Abraham was from Ur of the Chaldees. Anybody want to tell me where Ur is? Anybody know the name of this river right here? It's an important Bible river, okay? And it's the river Euphrates. And Ur is right down here in this area in this generation. So God calls Abraham, goes up to Haran, then comes down into this land. And God tells Abraham, you walk all over this land and I'm going to give it to you. Makes the same similar promise to Isaac. Someday I'll make a great nation of you. I'll send a great Savior. I'll put you in a great land. And someday I will send a great Savior. Now, how does that transpire? How do we get Abraham and Jacob, how do we get them down here so we can talk about Egyptian bondage? Well, let's look at another map, because on it we've got the location of Joseph and of Moses. And we've got this limited place. I don't like maps that are too busy. I'm about to put the next slide up. It is not nearly as busy, but I'm going to put a busy slide up tonight of a map, and I hate them because I can't find anything on it. So what we've done is we've taken this map that had no names of this river, no names of the Tigris River, no marking of Ur, no marking of the place where the ark landed, and we've put on here the promised land, the land of Canaan. And then we've got the land of Egypt, and we put on here the Red Sea, because that's going to be a part of our study tonight. And I would encourage you to go use those maps in the back of the Bible. I mean, I really, really would. I'm not sure if our pew Bibles have any things like that. But how do you get the children of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, how do you get them down to the land of Egypt? It has to do with Joseph. Let's look at the map that shows Joseph, and it shows, the next map shows where Joseph is. Obviously, here's Ur of the Chaldees to look over here, and there's not, you'll have to go to where the pointer is, and there's the Tigris and Euphrates River running up there, and there's Haran, and then Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob live down in this area. Let me just show how interesting it is. You see Hebron there? Now, Beersheba was down there. That was a part of the life of Abraham. But whenever Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is there, and he has Joseph. And he tells Joseph, who has the coat of many colors, I'm assuming you know some of these Bible stories. Joseph has the coat of many colors, said, go check on your brothers and see how your brothers are doing. How old's Joseph? Well, he's 17 years of age when he gets down here in the land of Egypt. So he's 17 years of age. And I want to know how many of you who have a 17-year-old child would trust them at age 17 to get all the way from Hebron all the way up here to Shechem. You know how far that is? It's 50 miles. And he did not have a GPS. And young people, I know you can't function. Can't even find your way home sometime, you know. And for sure you can't remember which house is grandma's house, but you've got your GPS and everything. He's a teenager. Now his brothers are up here in Shechem, and so he says, "You go 45 miles up there, and see, check on your brothers and how they're doing. Would you send your child on a 45-mile journey? It just shows you something about Joseph and something about the maturity of individuals who are there. So he gets up there, and when he gets up here to Shechem, he can't find his brothers. And he asked somebody, and they said, well, we heard them say they were going to go over to Shechem. Well, Shechem's another 15 miles away. So now it's a 65-mile journey. What's 65 miles north or south of us? Can you imagine the terrain, the lack of roads, and all of those things? And finally, when he gets up to Shechem, he finds his brothers and everything. That's when his brothers sell him, and that's when his brothers send him down here to the land of Egypt. And so now then, we're jumping a long period of time because we've been from the creation to the flood to the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and now we're getting to Joseph. Time-wise, it might help you to put some dates there. How long is it from the creation until the flood? 1656 years. From Adam unto Noah and the flood. That's five chapters of the Bible. Well, to get to the flood, you've got to get through the first seven chapters to get the flood actually on this earth. 1600 years. How long are the patriarchs? If that's the next age, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, you know Abraham lived a long time and Isaac lived a long time and Jacob lived a long time. Let's throw another 300 years in there. The call of Abraham is generally dated about the year 1900 B.C. And that's usher's dating of that. So you've got 1600 years, then you got 300 years. Then you got Joseph, and we'll just sort of throw him in the mix here. But from the time that they get down there in the land of Egypt, they're in the land of Egypt for 430 years. You know how many chapters in the Bible that covers? Four verses. That is amazing. And so that's why when we're talking about Egyptian bondage, we're talking about a 430-year period. Now, it's difficult here in dividing all of these things, and that's why sometimes I'd rather talk about individuals. If I can go from Joseph to Moses, I got a dividing line, you know, because it's enough period of time. But when you get to Moses, where's Moses? Well, Moses is in the two groups we're going to look at tonight. So I got Moses on both sides of this. And I couldn't decide whether to put baby Moses, and I just sort of mixed them all up and everything in relationship to this. How many of those names do you know there? You stop and you think of it. Anybody know who Pharaoh is? Yeah, I think I know. Yeah, Joseph. Yeah, that one I know. Amram and Jochebed. Any idea who that is? John, you know who that is? It's mom and dad. Who's mom and daddy? It's Moses's. That's Moses' parents, Amram and Jochebed. You got Potiphar. Who's Potiphar? If I say Potiphar's wife, if I say Joseph and Potiphar's wife, I know who she is. I know he was the one that bought Joseph, Potiphar. I know him. And I know Jacob and Esau. And then I put on here Ephraim and Manasseh just because of the lesson we talked about, in a bulletin article about Manasseh and everything and things of that nature. Read last week's bulletin, you'll understand why I've got Ephraim and Manasseh here. Geographically, where are the places? During this period of time, geographically, what are we talking about? It's almost all Egypt, isn't it? Because the next thing's going to be the Exodus, and that's going to be period number five that we're going to cover in the latter part of our class tonight. But geographically, where we're talking about? Well, if go ahead and put up that next slide. I've listed three places, and I put the river, and I put the word Nile, and put some question marks after it. Where do you find baby Moses? Somewhere in the waters down there in the river, and I would assume it's the Nile River. The Bible doesn't specifically mention that place, but wait a minute. Goshen? You know, you've heard of the lands of Goshen. Well, that's some slang word. Did you ever heard anybody use the word lands of Goshen as an exclamation? Well, lands of Goshen, I didn't know that. I didn't know if you ever heard that or not. But you go back, if you're as old as I am, sometimes you hear that kind of language that's used, Goshen. Well, we'll talk about it in just a minute. And then we put Mount Sinai here because it's a part of the time of the Egyptian bondage, even though it's really a part of the Exodus. How old is Moses when he dies? 120. Where did he spend the first third of his life, the next 40 years? Where is he? Where's Moses? Geographically, where is he? What country? He's down there. He's Pharaoh's son. You know, I mean, he's Pharaoh's grandson, I guess that would be, because the daughter of Pharaoh is the one who found baby Moses and everything. And then where does Moses spend the next 40 years of his life? Not in Egypt. Over there at Mount Sinai. He's taking care of sheep. And so you begin looking at these places, and let's look at that map that has these places on it. It's slide number 13. Whoever's on the slides back there, go to slide number 13. I believe it's the next slide. There we go. It's too busy. Can't find anything on it. You got maps in the back of your Bible. You want some busy maps? Can't see anything on it. And so a few years ago, some of these earlier maps that you saw, I drew my own things, and I put, let me ask you, where is Egypt on this map? Well, you see the promised land. You don't see the Tigris and Euphrates. And so, you know, if you love maps as much as I do, and you know, I just hope you love them half as much as I do. But here is the boundaries. There's a place here called the River of Egypt. And from the River of Egypt all the way up here to the Euphrates River. That's the promised land. Now, Joseph gets us down here into the land, into this land, the land of Egypt. And Egypt, if I were doing this map, I'd make Egypt a lot bigger word to show it includes all of this Nile River. But the land of Goshen has something really important to do with your life. It's where you get my pillows for $29.95. Have you seen that commercial about the best cotton on earth? Have you seen that? And he even names that by place. Giza, I think, is what he calls it, G-I-Z-A. And if you look at that map, it's right up in here. You see that? That is one of the commercials you see all the time. You know, my pillows. You know what I'm talking about? You've seen that. It has Bible significance because when Joseph brings Jacob and his brothers down to the land of Egypt, they're given the land of Goshen. Isn't that amazing? They've left the promised land and they go down to the best land there is down there in the land of Egypt. And sometimes we lose sight of that, and so that's rather important. And so whoever's back there on the slides, let's just flip back and forth between slides 13 and 14. I've asked about Egypt. I'll look down at my notes. Where was the water turned into blood? Go back to slide 13. Go back to slide 13. Where was the water turned into blood? Well, down here in the land of Egypt. how much of the water in Egypt was turned into blood. You know the magnitude of this miracle? If every bit of the water, even in the wells, were turned into blood. Isn't that? I want you to look at the magnitude of the miracle when the water in Egypt was turned into blood. And so you've got to see that. Now then, I ask you where the Red Sea is. And I had it on a previous map. I don't want to go to it. The Red Sea, you see right over here, is called the Red Sea. And this is called the Red Sea. You look at a world map, and this comes down, and this is all of Africa, all the way down over here. But this sea extends way down into this area. And so that's just a really, it's not a tributary because there's no water that runs naturally through that. But that's the Red Sea, and that's the Red Sea. So when we talk about the Red Sea in the Bible, it has real, real significance. But and we'll get to the Exodus in a minute, whenever they leave the land of Egypt, they cross the Red Sea. And so when we get to the Exodus, we're going to see a lot of these things. I've got the River Nile. I also point out where Rephidim is. You want to look here on the map. He's got it listed right here with a question mark because it's very near Mount Sinai. And that place is a place of real consequences. And let's go over, go ahead, go to that next slide. Let's talk a little bit about the events. We've talked about the people that are there in the land of Egypt. We didn't spend much time. Well, let's go back to slide 12. I thought I had Amram and Jochebed on there. Let's go back to slide 12 here. Thank you for putting that up. I saw that a moment ago, and I thought that was the same one we were just looking at. But who's Miriam? She's down in the Exodus. You know who she is? Moses' sister. You see his brother's name up there? Aaron. You see his father-in-law's name? Jethro. Now, it is not true that his big brother was Homer. You may have heard of Homer and Jethro. Homer didn't make it into the Bible, at least in that respect. Though the word Homer is found in the Bible, Jethro is his father-in-law. He plays an important part. And then Amalek. If I say Amalekites, in the book of Exodus, in the time of the Exodus, you'll run across the Amalekites. I mean, here's their name here, the sons of Amalek. Are you aware? They're in the Bible even before they get to Mount Sinai. You know what happens? The Jews have come across the Red Sea. And they brought a lot of the gold with them from Egypt. In fact, before they left, the night they were leaving, the Egyptians gave them. They didn't borrow it, but they gave it to the Israelites, wanted them to get out of there. And if you'll read it carefully, and so they've got all of these possessions. They're not a nation. They've been dealing with mud bricks, and so the Amalekites who lived back up in the southern part of the Promised Land come down there. And they're ready to fight and destroy the Jewish nation. They cannot fight at all. Guess where all of that happened? Rephidim. It happened in the land of, in a city called Rephidim. That's amazing, isn't it? And so they come down to Rephidim, and you know who became the general down at Rephidim? Who is the general in Moses' army? His name was Joshua. And so you've got Joshua there, and you've got Joshua there down in that land. And so Joshua's the one. Wait a minute. Moses is holding up his hands. You remember that story when he was holding up his hands? He doesn't bother me, by the way, if that's all right. I don't mind him being here. Shouldn't bother any of us. You remember, as Moses has his hands holding up to God, the Jews win the battle. How long can you physically hold your hands up? Well, I can do it for a long time. Go home and just see how long you can do it. What does Moses do? He drops his hands. And so then they start losing the battle. He gets them up again. Well, your hands are already tired, and he drops his hands. You know, I mean, just this, all of this is not in the Bible. It's in Dan's imagination as I read the Bible. And finally, they find a solution. They sit Moses down on a big stone. Him and her hold up Moses' hands. Now, her is not H-E-R. That's not female. It's H-U-R. That's a man's name. You know who the him is? That's a pronoun. It's Aaron. And so Aaron and her hold up, him and her holds up his hands. That's the way I remember that. And so you've got all of that. And all of that happened. Let's go back to that next slide and everything, because we need to find Kadesh Barnea. They come down to Mount Sinai. They come out of this land and they cross the Red Sea. Sometimes you'll see maps that say, well, they came across a marshy area. That wasn't a marshy area. They crossed the Red Sea. And sometimes they'll say, well, that's the Reed Sea, R-E-E-D. I'm sorry, it's Red, R-E-D-C. And they come across, and 3 days after they cross the Red Sea, they come back again and touch down in this area. And after they've gone 3 days' journey, after they cross the Red Sea, they come back and they touch the Red Sea again. I know what the Red Sea is. You want to talk about the magnitude of crossing the Red Sea? How many people left the land of Egypt? 603,550 men above 20 years of age left. You give them all a wife, give all of them 2.4 children, isn't that the number of children that you have or something like that? And so you've got 3 to 5, 6 million people there. In one night's time, because they crossed the Red Sea at night, in one night's time, 6 million people walked through the Red Sea. You want to do some math? Some of you who are engineers and love to deal with numbers. How wide is the crossing for them to ever be able to cross? How fast do you cross? Well, as you cross 3 miles, can you walk 3 miles an hour? Yeah. Well, you got 12 hours to get across. All right, I figured that out. And so I figured out going single file and then how far. Do you know? It was miles and miles wide. The next time you stand on the beach down here in West Palm Beach, I want you to see that ocean. That's what they saw. And when that ocean up, every Bible pane you've ever seen, it wasn't the path through is not much wider than this building or this property anyway. It's several miles wide for them to be able to go through. You know about the magnitude of the miracle of crossing the Red Sea. So they come to Kadesh Barnea, and then I want to point out a couple of other places. One of them is right up here, and that's Mount Nebo. That's where Moses dies. And so we're going to talk about the conquering of the land next week, going up here and taking this promised land back. But when you come across this map, forget about all this Bitter Lake and the Little Bitter Lake and some of these other places. And in my mind, I would look at Mount Marah, which means bitterness. That's where the bitter water was. And Elim, that's where they threw the trees in and made the... There's Rephidim where they fought. There's Mount Sinai. Four things happen at Mount Sinai. They're there for a year's time. And so you in your mind, you've got to remember the kinds of things that happened when they got to Mount Sinai.
Well,
when they arrive at Mount Sinai, they'll arrive there at that place, and the voice of God starts speaking to them. The mountain is on fire. You need to carefully read the description of that mountain. I want you to think about earthquakes. Ever been in one? You stop and think about an earthquake that is so massive that it indicates the very presence of God. Ground shaking beneath your feet. And this mountain being on fire, thunder and fire and smoke. And all of a sudden, the voice comes out of that mountain, and it's the voice of God. I want you to be a 7 or 8 year old child, and that happens. Would you ever forget it? You have any terrifying things that happened to you when you were about 6, 7, 8 years of age? Can you imagine that child seeing every bit of that? Impact it had on him. Now, the impact it had on the adults, it scared them to death. Why? Because when God spoke, can you imagine how loud the voice of God was? By the way, you see where Mount Sinai is? That's where Moses saw the burning bush. That's where Moses saw the burning bush at Mount Sinai. And so now he's at age 40 when he leaves the land of Egypt, comes down to Mount Sinai, meets his father-in-law and his future father-in-law, and marries Zipporah, Moses' wife, marries her. And then he's 80 years of age when he heads back to lead them out of the land of Egypt. And now he arrives at Mount Sinai. And this time it's not a burning bush. It's a burning mountain. I remember telling this story to my children and trying to help them see the magnitude, not of this particular event, but something just like this particular event, when I was talking to them with them about the burning bush. And, we had the two of them, Debbie and David, and it's before Gary, but it's before Gary came into the picture. But I was telling these two this story. And I said, and they went over there to that
voice. Who do you want the message?
They went over there to this burning bush. And when they arrived over here at the burning bush, somebody started talking. And so I gave my voice of God. Moses, Moses, take off your shoes. You're standing on holy ground. David's eyes got as big as I've ever seen them. He said, Daddy, I knew I'd connected. Daddy, where'd those holes come from? It's holy ground. And so if you hear holy ground, don't think of what a little 4 or 5 year old kid would think of. You know how big sisters are, know it all. She said, David, holy, like Holy Bible. He said, yeah, like I knew that, you know. But now the voice of God says, thou shalt have no other gods. Thou shalt not make any graven image. How long did it take them to forget that second thing God said. Moses is up there 40 days, and they come down, there's the golden calf. He comes down with the Ten Commandments. So two of the things that happened at Mount Sinai is, two of the things that happen at that land is they received the Ten Commandments. In that movie, Ten Commandments, they don't illustrate the voice of God. I wish they had, because it bothered me after I saw the movie. And I'm not sure exactly what year it came out, but it bothered me. How on earth was it wrong for them to make a golden calf? Because they had not even received the Ten Commandments. They had not received the Ten Commandments in a written form until Moses comes off the mountain. But before Moses ever went up into that mountain, the voice of God said, "Thou shalt not make unto thyself any graven image." Can you imagine how resonant that was? God doesn't do things halfway. In the movie, that laser finger comes and writes those Ten Commandments, and the voice of God sort of speaks them in that movie. I haven't seen that movie in 25 years, probably. They missed it all. They missed the most remarkable thing. You've got to go, and when you read the Bible, you ought to read these Bibles and be a little 7-year-old boy. You really ought to be an individual who does that kind of thing. And they went and they read the Scriptures. And when you read the Bible, that's where you'll find what he called these things behind the veil. I noticed he put that scripture back up. Let's get to these four things here because we're running out of time. They spend a year there. What do? They build the tabernacle. The word tabernacle means tent. That's all it means. Peter said at the Mount of Transfiguration, let's build three tabernacles. Let's erect three tents. One for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah. That's all it means. But man, it's a holy tabernacle. You've got to understand that. And then the other thing they do is they number the people. Number the people. I believe I've got some slides, do I not, of some of these things. You know the name of that calf? That's slide number 15. You know the name of that calf? There's an artist's conception of the gold of worship. You know the name of that golden of that that calf? The Bible tells you if you read it carefully. Aaron says, after he's made this idol, they're going to worship. Tomorrow is a feast day unto Jehovah. They had not adopted Egyptian gods. They wanted their own God, and they illustrated him using a calf, which is one of the things they worship down in the land of Egypt. But they were not taking the Egyptian gods and saying, that's the God we want. No, we just want to be like those. We got to have some way to see him. Tomorrow is a feast day unto Jehovah. The name of that calf is Jehovah. They were worshiping Jehovah. How'd God respond to that? You cannot worship God in your own way and be accepted by God. That's an amazing thing. And then that final slide, we've got illustrating that and put that back up. The matter of four events that happened there at Mount Sinai. What's that land look like? It's the most barren, desolate place on earth. You've got to keep in mind, though, it was a land that flowed with milk and honey. Promised Land was. And so it's possible that this wilderness was not the desolate wilderness that you've seen when you've seen these Israelis and the Egyptians fighting in some of those wars in the last 25 or 30 years down in that area. But it's a very desolate place today. Sometimes wonder what physical marks were left on Mount Sinai itself when that mountain had on that mountain the presence of God. That's it for tonight. We'll take up here next week and we'll sort of start right here at Mount Sinai again and go to some of these other places. You did a great job putting these slides up. I'm sorry for making it hard jumping back and forth all over the place. But thank you very much for being here.